Mr. Dave.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the new Tuesday night call on Blog Talk Radio. We have migrated from TalkShoe over to here. We'd like to welcome everybody. We're going to do Q&A and everything exactly the same here as we have done on the other system. So please settle in and look forward to a night of some good question and answer. Jesse, I'm going to throw it to you to do a disclaimer, but I suppose I should tell everybody it is the 7th of January, 2014.
Yeah, can you imagine? It's our first call of the new year. So this marks our fourth year going into this. I think it's absolutely awesome. January 19th will be 4 years. Is that awesome or what? It is. I mean, I don't know where the heck time goes, man. It's unbelievable. It just flies by. But anyway, welcome, everybody. I'm sure at the beginning of the message you guys heard star one, or just press one to raise your hand and then press one to lower your hand. Okay, and generally I know Dave starts with good news, so I'm going to let him do all that. I'm just going to give you the quick disclaimer, and he's going to give the, for those of you that are new, welcome aboard. He'll give you guys the routine that we do every Tuesday night until we start with the webinar series here in about a month and a half. And once we get that going, this call will be, the show will be every other Tuesday. So with that being said, of course, guys, tonight the subject matter of our call is always legal information, and we have a lot of fun discussing it, and we do this on a time basis, a weekly basis for you guys, and take our time to answer all these calls or all these questions for you guys. But again, nothing that we discuss on this call should be taken as legal advice, because it's not meant to be legal advice, and it shouldn't be taken that way. We urge you guys, if you want legal advice, please seek out an attorney. Go study. Go do whatever you want. We're not attorneys. We don't proclaim to be attorneys. So, again, for those of you that are looking for legal advice, this is not the place to be. If you guys want to share experiences and discuss legal situations or legal information that is out there for all of us and have fun doing so, then welcome aboard. Again, Gary says we got a great feed coming in. Thanks, Gary. I'm glad to hear it since everybody's on edge right now. So the moderators, though, need to lower your hands. I see this little question mark.
All they have to do is hit one on your keypad. Don't use a star or anything. Just hit one, and that will lower your hand out of the queue here, so I don't have to deal with you. So, all the moderators, if you'll do that, that'll help.
Yep. So, with that being said, guys, I'll let Dave take over. Thanks, Dave. I know you took some training today with Gary. I didn't get to do it because we only one at a time. So he showed me after the fact, and this is actually a pretty neat system. I'm pretty impressed. So, I don't know about you, but I think we're going to have a lot of fun adding little things and gadgets to it. And it's going to be cool.
Dave, I just missed what you asked the moderators to do as I was being interrupted. What was it?
Hit one on your keypad to lower your hand because it shows that you have your hand up.
Larry, I see your hand still up.
Yeah.
Okay, I took my hand down.
Okay, it's not changing on this end, but we'll have to see about dealing with that. There's a couple little things for everybody out here. There's one little thing that Gary, our fabulous webmaster and tech expert, and believe me, he is a tech expert, actually made a suggestion to Blog Talk to resolve a problem that he identified when he came on, and they were quite interested because nobody had ever brought it up before, but it's something to simplify the process of what we're doing and what we were just talking about. So we might have a kink or two here in the first week, but I think Blog Talk is really going to be a good system to deal with, and I was having some discussions with Gary today, and as Jesse was just saying, we'll have some interesting things for you guys coming up. It's not just going to be, so to speak, exactly the same old, same old. So
that would be a lot of fun.
We are going to have a lot of fun. And, I've got some good news. But for those people tonight that want to ask a question, when I tell you to later on, you will just hit the 1 on your keypad. That's for question and answer later. We'll start with good news first. But the system here is just a little bit different than TalkShoe. You don't use a star. You simply hit the 1 key to put your hand up so that we can catch your attention to be able to do things here. So Jesse, have you got any specific announcements or any good news or anything that you want to bring out?
No, I've got nothing. I've got nothing crazy. I just, there's a lot of news going on, a lot of consent orders being done. J.P. Morgan Chase is actually suing the FDIC. now it's going back on them, saying, hey, wait a minute, you bribed me into taking over WAMU, and now I'm getting my butt sued. Listen, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I'll discuss a little bit of that later. I just want you to go ahead and talk to the our new listeners and our listeners here. And let them know how we're going to take this call. One for the good news, raise your hand, then we're to the new callers, and then we'll get on with the regular questioning.
Yeah.
So, why don't you discuss that with them? And I know we still have new callers. We have callers that are migrating that for some reason, they never check their email. So.
there's going to be a transition period here where some people are still over at the other place. They're busy. They don't read their emails. Whatever the situation is, they didn't get the word. So with us being just a little slower getting started is giving them a few minutes to get over here and be able to join us. But as everybody knows, we start out with good news, because we need to hear about the good things that are happening, whether it be a success in court or somebody getting a check or any number of other things that can constitute good news. So if anybody has good news, this is the time for you to go ahead and just hit the 1 key on your keypad on your phone. That will put you in the queue, and we can call on you for good news. I actually have a little bit of good news that I got, which I got within about a half hour before the call started tonight. I've got a brand new debt collector that's calling my cell phone.
Nice. I do have good news too. So, but you're right. I forgot all
that. The funny part. The funny part about this is, it's somebody that I've already been in litigation with and just resolved the case not long ago. It was over credit pulls. And this will now give me an action for TCPA. The other part of my good news is I have 73 calls from Midland in 36 days.
Nice.
And they're calling 4 times a day, and I keep answering and telling them to quit calling, and they hang up on me. So, for me, that's good news. That's like money in the bank going forward. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Terry, did you have any good news?
Yeah, I got a little bit. Two-parter. First, the same three-headed beast that three of us are currently dealing with have missed their fourth hard deadline. Sent you an email about that earlier. It is now after 8 o'clock. They missed it again. But they sent me by UPS, which is not acceptable service, their idea of discovery, and it is hilarious. And none of it, I can answer all of it with the same answer. None. No. Haven't got any. None of it pertains to anything in my life before I became retired, unemployed, no income, no credit accounts, no bank, nothing they want. I don't have any of that. It's all toward the last 5 years, and it's been 5 years since I had any of that.
Well, it's they're they're going to have a bit of a problem on their hands. And the fact that they are sending discovery to you in violation of the court order of how they're supposed to respond to you. So it's
well, it's not only a court order, but it is also in the federal rules of civil
right.
procedure. And I'll give you that number. That civil procedure number is.
FRCP 5, isn't it?
FRCP 5, which, and it is, it states that service by mail is United States Postal Service, and it specifically UPS, FedEx, etc., does not constitute service by mail for purposes of federal rules. And my judge specifically ordered them to effect service to me by, and he wrote it out, United States Postal Service.
Well, you're going to have fun with that. So that is good news. Absolutely.
Isn't it? Oh, and then there was just, I think the funniest event of this entire day, maybe the whole week, is with this horrid, horrid weather that we're having all across the nation. Now they're calling it a polar vortex. That's a good one. An escaped prisoner in Kentucky turned himself back in, begged to get back in the cell. He was freezing.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. Oh, man. I can understand that, though. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, escaped.
It can be
all the trouble,
even in Kentucky.
Escaped prison and then came back because he was going to freeze to death.
Yeah, jeez, that's wild. All righty, well, thank you. Jesse, you said you had some good news?
Well, you have part of my news, right? You know, you were supposed to look through it, and you know the dollar amounts on my summary judgment. So.
Yeah, I've done some, but there's other notes that I need to put into it to send to you.
No, I don't care. I know that. I'm just saying dollar amounts. You're helping me with it. You know, I'm moving
right.
in for a summary judgment on a TCPA case, guys, for $151,500. So,
whoa.
And the chances of me getting it are about 95%.
Right. Did you get that case I sent you by email yesterday?
Don't remember, Terry. Yesterday and today have been a blur, sweetheart. Literally.
All right.
But it's just, you can just resend it if you don't mind. It'd be fast. So that'd be great. But, yeah, it's I'm telling you, it has been a literal blur yesterday. I told my wife just a while ago at dinner, I said, man, where the heck has the time gone? Seems like I can't get nothing done. And yesterday I was up at 4 in the morning. It just doesn't make any sense. But regardless, $151,500 on that particular
summary. That's
going to
be a nice payday. You know, Jesse?
Yeah.
Jesse?
Yeah, sir.
You said that you were going to have them buy you a property free
and
clear.
Cash. That's right, and that's what they're going to
exactly.
do.
There it is right there, everybody.
Yeah.
So,
I'm telling you, they're going to do it. And it's funny enough, absolute worst case scenario, I get $100,000 out of it. I'm pushing for the extra 50 grand, but we'll see what happens. And I should get it, but, you know, if the judge is not feeling good or tired of looking at me, then he might say, no, you're only getting the $50,000 or the $100,000. That's fine. I'll still take the $100,000. So
yeah.
I think that's a hell of a payday. For anybody's book from a debt collector. We'll take it. So there you are.
Well,
I'm happy.
Yeah. And you know, that's what happens when you get a bunch of calls, and just I'll throw this little thing in, and we've got a couple of people that have their hands raised. You know, people don't have any idea what can happen with a cell phone. You know, some of you know that your phones get blown up with calls and everything. Since the 1st of July of last year, on my cell phone, I have received 169 calls that I can litigate. 169. That's $250,000 in statutory damages. So, but that's spread over half a dozen collectors. But just the same, that's a lot of money.
And they're 100% indefensible because they weren't even calling for you.
Exactly.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's go to 360 for your good news. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Is this, am I on?
If you were
yes,
just
sir.
Unmuted.
All right. I didn't hear a beep. So this is David out here in Washington State. and I hadn't been on a lot of the calls. I've been pretty busy, and I just had a newborn baby here
awesome.
On Friday.
Congratulations!
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I personally delivered it.
Did you? That's awesome.
Yeah. How was the labor, buddy? Poor guy.
Yeah. It was something, I tell you. Hey, so anyway, good news is, besides that, which is really great news, was I've collected since the summer, and I really haven't been doing anything because I really wanted to learn my material. That's kind of how I work. But I really started getting busy in August with one company, and then I work like, you know, sometimes 60 hours a week, and then, you know, I got like 9 kids. And so I really wasn't hammering things
10?
Like I should. What's that?
Is this number 10?
No, well, that's the number 9.
Okay.
And so anyway, I decided that I was going to hammer these guys, and so far I've collected 7,600. And the funny thing was,
awesome.
is that the person that I got 2,000 from in the summer, I can talk about Bank of America, but Bank of America hired them as third-party debt collectors. And so I hammered them for 2, and then Bank of America come back again and wanted me to do a loan modification, and they hired the same group. So they gave me a letter, and I knew everything that was going on about it because I did my investigation. I said, hey, you guys are going to pay me $2,000, I'm writing you in the lawsuit. And, boy, she just cried and whined like you wouldn't believe. And she said, we paid you last time for those TCPA calls. So I said, well, whatever. Let me know what you guys discuss. Within 3 days, their company had called me 3 times. And this is one I'd already notified with a certified letter not to call anymore. So I wrote her back in an email saying, well, right now it's at 6,000, and she was willing to give me $250. And so I said, well, it's at 6,000 now, but let me know what you come up with. So we finally settled at 2,750 just because I wanted to get them out of my hair. And then
unless
the other,
you want to keep calling me, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, anyway. But then the last thing, which is really exciting, I bought that collections book by the NCLC. But one of the things that was interesting was that I hadn't been sued before, and I finally got sued. And but they said a complaint had been filed against me, and I don't know if this is in your jurisdictions, but over here they can start it, and they don't even file it yet. But the court rules state that if I ask them to file it with the court – they have to file it within 14 days or what they summoned is invalid. And so I went ahead and wrote them a letter of saying I want that register, I want that filed with the court, and I never did. So they probably saw my 4 small plaintiffs, suits that I had going. And so anyway, that's my good news.
Oh, that's great
news.
That's wonderful news.
Yeah. On both your newborn and the and the money you got coming in. That's great.
Yeah.
Didn't
and
hear
then later,
you said, girl, boy?
Oh, it's a boy. My firstborn is 18 now. He's my boy. And then I had 7 girls. And then now I got Jack.
And are you going to agree with me the boys are easier?
You know, I don't really know.
Because mom does it, right?
He's too busy to know.
I'm too busy to know.
Yeah.
But, they're fun.
All righty. Well, congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for the good news.
Awesome,
and again, that's great for your family, and it's great for your pocketbook as well.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to our next caller here. Evidently, must be a Skype caller. It's a 111-111. Lots of ones. You have some good news for us. You've been unmuted. 111. If you were just unmuted, you're up for good news.
After his good news, I don't want to ever hear anybody say I don't have the time to do this.
Yeah, really? Okay.
Yeah. I got to say, Terry, you make a very valid point.
Yeah. All right. There's nobody coming up there, so we're going to go to 760 for good news. 760.
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead. You got some good news for us?
Oh, you know what? No, I think I'm on the wrong not good news. I just got questions, you know.
Okay. I haven't announced to get in for questions yet. Wait till I do that
I
and then press 1 again for the questions.
Yeah, I'm
okay?
sorry. Yeah, I came
All
on
right,
late.
No problem.
Why.
All right. We are going to go to, well, come on, screen. Move down here. We're going to go to 760 for Good news. Well, I mean,
is that
we already. Yeah, okay. I was going to say that it's the same one. The board's
same
moving up and down here. Everybody bear with us. It's the first week with the new board. Thank you. All right, we're going to go to 617 for good news. 617, you were just unmuted. Have you got good news for us?
Dave, can you hear me?
We can barely hear you.
How's this? Is this better?
That's a little better.
All right, well, this is Paul. What's up, everybody? Happy New Year, everything.
Happy New Year, man.
Well, same to you, Paul. Right.
I got a little, I don't know, I know this is good news, but you know what I'm saying. I just jumped on Pacers about 7:45, and we're waiting for the decision to come down regarding an Optima mortgage. They had a default judgment I had got like a year ago, and they finally came out with the report and recommendations. I haven't read it yet or anything. I just see that magistrate judge wrote a 30-page order on this thing, report and recommendations, assessment of damages, and she went through it with a fine-tooth comb. But the bottom line is she recommended that I receive $14,825 for their default judgment. I know that's good news. So
you
I got to pick through it and read through it and get the details. Because I just seen it on Pacers like 15 minutes ago. But that's some good news. That's what you can do when you're part of what lies in your debt, you know?
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, thank
you. And you're off to a good
start
for this year, aren't you?
Yeah, man. You guys make it possible, man. Got all these resources, these shows, and, oh, man, this is just an awesome thing. And, David, I was on your call last night. I heard what you say, that we got to start getting more people word of mouth, and you're correct. And I'm one of the culprits that I need to get on that this year. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, to bring some more people and get some more of this information out and get some more members, get the members up, because that's one thing we got to do to give back. And Yeah, we have to. That's the only way we can keep winning. If we keep it amongst ourselves and amongst our circle, it's not doing us the just that we can do by spreading the word. So, Dave, you got my word. That's one of my New Year's resolutions. I incorporated that into it. I'm going to get some more members and spread the word, okay? And make some cards.
Fantastic. I love it. Thank you, Paul. And
you're
I hope
welcome,
everybody.
That's right.
Yeah, I hope everybody will take that to heart because, you know, we don't advertise in TV or radio or print or anything else. You know, word of mouth is the best advertising that was ever devised. It's you talking to someone else wherever you are, wherever you go, and bringing up the subject. And a quick example, as I mentioned last night on my call, I was at the bank yesterday, and I was talking to the teller. And I happened to mention what we're doing. She's new. She's young. And lo and behold, I said something about getting some money on phone calls from my cell phone. And her eyes lit up, and she says, oh, I've got people that are just blowing up my cell phone. These debt collectors are calling for somebody else. It's not even me. And I said, do you realize that you can make money out of that? And she says, what? I sat there and explained to her some of the stuff. Now, mind you, I'm in a bank. I'm talking to the teller, and the manager, the branch manager, is sitting behind her. She overhears the conversation, and she sticks her head around, and she starts getting into it and wanting to know answers to questions about it. And I gave each one of them one of my cards that I hand out that has the information on how to learn about it. That's what I do. I have no holds barred, and all of you can do likewise. You can all go out and talk to people wherever you are. Here's people in the bank that are getting beat up by the debt collectors, and they want to do something about it. So you never know. And they were tickled to death to find out the information that I had and that there was this resource out here. So please spread the word. You guys are our megaphone, and we need all the help we can get, because the more of you that we have doing what we're doing, the bigger effect we're going to have on the industry. It's a matter of us not only stopping them but digging in their pockets. So
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. I appreciate your commitment. You've been a fantastic example of what somebody can do with learning here. You did it the hard way, but, boy, you've done it in a big way.
Thank you.
And for those of you that don't know, Paul took in about six figures last year and bought some rental properties and paid cash for them, all just dealing with TCPA stuff.
That's right.
And he learned at night when he was working nights. He listened to the calls, the archive calls. So if anybody says, well, you know, I can't do this, well, Paul's a great example of how you can do it if you want to do it. It's, the question is, I've said 100 times, is how bad do you want it? And if you want it bad enough, you'll make it happen, just like Paul. So.
Yeah. Well,
thank you. Paul back in the queue.
And Paul doesn't have 9 kids either. So, you know, I mean, these two guys are great examples. You know what I mean? A huge example of what they can do.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Let's see if there's anybody else here. Yeah, we have 954 that's jumped in here. 954, do you have some good news for us?
I sure do. Karima.
Let's hear it. Hi, Karima.
I had filed against Dell on December 12th, and they defaulted.
So I went to
court, and I filed. I got a clerk's default, and just waiting on the judge to sign the final judgment. And once the judge does that, I go collect, and I decided if they don't decide to pay me quickly, I'm just going to send a truck and a sheriff to go clean out their corporate headquarters.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. That's a great way to start the new year, isn't it?
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I just can't wait to collect. Life will get better, to say the least.
Yep.
So.
There you go.
Anyway.
Well, congrats to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Wonderful. And that's, you know, we're
good
kicking off the year pretty good here, you know it?
Yep, sure are.
All right. Let's. We got another caller here for good news, hopefully. 941, you've been unmuted. Do you have good news for us? 941?
Yes, I have good news. This is Jennifer. Okay. My husband got a new cell phone 2 years ago and was receiving calls to the prior owner from a debt collector. But I hadn't found y'all until 4 months ago, and we joined your organization, and this call started coming again to his cell phone, and I studied your site, and I followed your instructions in the webinars and the documents, and the week before Christmas, I filed a notice of intent to sue in small claims court for 10 phone calls to his cell phone, and this afternoon, we received an email from the law firm representing the third-party debt collector with an offer to settle for $4,500.
Whoa, Merry Christmas.
First time out. Thank you so much for what you've done and how you put it together.
Well, you're the one that did it. We put the stuff on the table, and you are the one that sat down and had the meal, took the stuff, and did something with it. Congratulations, and thank you.
The yarn, you knit the sweater.
Pardon?
Oh, man.
I said we just gather the yarn, you knit the sweater.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Keep it up.
Well, you keep up the good work as well. Thank you very much, and congratulations, man. That is super. Boy, this is a great way to start the year.
It is.
And it's only going to get better from here, folks. It's only going to get better from here. All right. Well, we had somebody else jump in. Yeah, Jeff,
is my hand up?
Is your hand up? Your hand is up. Don't worry about it. We'll get that resolved.
No, we got you marked.
Well, we already know it's resolved.
The problem is, Dave, that's news. That's the reason why I raised my hand.
Oh, well, it's been up, Jeff. The problem is the moderator's hand, since you guys are unmuted already, you can't lower your hand. You know what I mean? We can't get rid of it. So,
I raised my hand because I got good news from one of our students who works nights and can't be on the call. And he got a half a dozen calls to his cell phone, and it's not a debt collector. This firm evidently buys lien and judgment records out of the courthouse, and they
nice.
Called. And they were offering to be of assistance to him with his tax liens. Now, you know, he did not give them any kind of express, written or otherwise, to call him. So he's got them on the hook for six calls. He sent them a notice of intent to sue, and within 24 hours of their having received it, he got a response.
Oh,
so
wow.
He's working with him.
Good.
So I just wanted to sort of put that out to let you know that it isn't just debt collectors that this applies to.
Yeah, that's
right.
Important
oh, yeah.
that you remind people there doesn't need to be collection or any debt because the TCPA has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, we still get people confused that.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
This was basically a telemarketing call.
Right.
And the TCPA applies to that, too. So he's got him on the hook for six calls.
Excellent.
That is super.
So I
all
told
right.
him that since he couldn't be on the call at night, that I would put it out there.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
forgot.
Now,
Pastor Will across the street, he bought cell phones for his boys for Christmas, track phones. And all of a sudden, both of them started getting blown up with debt collectors. The oldest one has been paying attention to Daddy and learning something, and he came running to him and said, "Daddy, how much do they owe us already?" And the wife said, and he's 15, and the wife said, "Oh, no, I guess we better get those phone numbers changed." And he said, "Woman, have you lost your mind?"
Yeah, that's right.
She still doesn't get it.
No,
she's,
but he's not going to change those numbers. And I said, "Well, isn't that lucky? They're minors. You're the owner of the phones. Split it with the kids."
Yeah, it
wow.
it truly is amazing. Okay, all of the people that we have had call in for good news, if I could ask you to press 1 on the keypad of your phone, we want to find out if that cancels the notification on our operations board here that you have your hand raised. If all of you, there's no star or anything, it's just hitting 1, and I'm thinking that's not going to cancel things. It doesn't appear that is working, so we're going to have to be able to identify that and resolve that. So
what day?
Anyway, well, yeah, there we are. We do have some of them dropping out. So those of you that to remind everybody when they got done with that. 954, I think we already caught you. If you could hit 1 on yours and 305.
I believe that's John.
I don't think.
Yeah, that's John. No, 954 is not John.
No, that's
not. It's a 561 number, yeah.
All right. Let's double check 954. 954, did you have good news or did we already catch you? 954, area code. I just unmuted you. Okay, evidently they're not paying attention to the phone. And then there's the other one. We'll double check 424. 424.
Yep. You got me.
Okay, we
right,
got you. Okay. If you can go ahead and press the 1 key, and that'll unmute you. Or it'll cancel you off the board, hopefully, I should say. Okay. You're still not dropping off. Maybe it'll do that in a second. But if you hit the 1 key, it is a toggling feature. So here again, we're getting used to a new system, everybody. So if there's a little bit of glitch here and things, we apologize. But we'll get this all resolved and get used to using the system. It's a little different than TalkShoe. All right. We are at the time where we are done with the good news. So if people have questions, now's the time for you to go ahead and hit 1 on your keypad, just number 1, and that will get you in the queue. And we are going to go to 360 for your question.
Hey, guys. This is Dave up here in Washington again.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, thanks. I decided to sue Capital One. And for a little brief intro here, Capital One USANA and Capital One Services LLC, their affiliate, like to use Capital One to encompass them together and then try to play dodgeball with whoever they're going after. And so what happened was I let the card just go. And then Capital One kept informing me of what they were like and that they were calling me. And all of my papers stated who Capital One was, that was Capital One Services LLC, not Capital One USANA, National Association. So,
very good observation. A lot of our members miss that.
Well, it kind of ticks me off because they're purposefully doing that. And I made a list. I listed over 56 calls total. I had about 15 calls to my home phone that were under – this is my main question here. The 15 calls were, I'm assuming, through a ATDS, and that it was from a pre-recorded or artificial voice leaving a message. And through the attorney, after I gave them a beautiful packet of evidence and I gave them three or four already stated complaints I was going to file with the small claims and already prefabricated federal court complaint that I'd be filing in March if we didn't settle this. So they came back and asked me what I wanted. And so in our disputes, he's telling me that the FCC, and I had the paper right here under their 45 CFR rule, stated, and I heard you talk about this too, about how they're exempt from the TCPA when calling a landline, even though it has an artificial voice and it leaves a pre-recorded message, if it was, and for our cases for debt collection, if it's made for a commercial purpose but doesn't include or introduce an advertisement or telemarketing. And this is the really interesting thing because, and it might be good for some of the people listening in, was that, I never had a relationship with Capital One Services LLC, and so they're the ones calling me, I'm alleging, and so they left the message, and the lawyer is stating, well, they were calling just to try to collect on a debt, but if you'll just let me read the two sentences that was left on my message over 15 times, it says, "Hi, this is Linda. We would like to discuss solutions regarding an important business matter with Capital One. Please call us back today at whatever the number is to discuss further." Again, that phone number is, and thank you.
Right.
Now, it seems to me that we're kind of like in an area of grayness there. Would you agree with that?
I would agree wholeheartedly, and I would argue to the fact that it's not debt collection, because if in fact it was debt collection, they would have to read a mini Miranda. They would have to tell you the purpose of the call. They would, have to reveal some information to you that was not there.
That's what I was thinking, and
that's what I would argue wholeheartedly. No, this couldn't have been for debt collection. Well, why? Well, then obviously you violated the FDCPA and any Washington state law, which in your particular case could be up to $5,000 per violation. So, why would I give in? There's no way. I'd argue left and right that that's not debt collection. Wouldn't you, Dave, Larry, John?
Absolutely. They didn't identify themselves as a debt collector.
Well, that's correct.
They may have mentioned the name of the company, but they didn't identify that they were a debt collector, and that's a violation right there.
And then along with the same case that I thought that the rest of the groups out there might be interested in, and Jeff, I had discussed with Jeff in a private phone conversation the idea of Capital One was taking a lot of TCPA cases across the nation to an MDL process, which stands for multi-district litigation, where they would take your TCPA case, a lot of times these were in small claims, and they would move them up to your district court and then transfer that to Chicago. And then just, I know you guys know this, but in case nobody else does, I looked up just briefly. They're using the 28 U.S.C. 1407A statute, which, and you guys can go read that, but basically what I've read is that it was a statute created to help plaintiffs, not defendants, plaintiffs suing people that violated their patents all over the country. And so they could kind of deal with this in one area, not for defendants trying to play dodgeball with litigants all over the country. And so
actually, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I told them, because they said they were going to move it, and I said, well, I'm going to drop my cases in the small claims, and I'm going to file them left and right for all my state claims, because I had $80,000 on them. And I said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start filing in the small claims where you can't come in with a paralegal or a lawyer, just state claims so you can't move them, and I'm not going to settle them, and we're going to get a judgment until you settle those TCPA. So that's how I handled that. But I just kind of wanted clarification.
Good for you.
There you go.
I learned it from you guys. So I'm not taking it from these guys.
Yeah, play hardball with them, you know. If they play hardball, you be back. And,
that's right.
Okay,
absolutely.
So now you've identified that Capital One is using MDL now, correct?
Yes, they are. I don't know how effective they've been doing it, but they told me right there.
Yeah, there's multiple companies that are using it. Portfolio Recovery is using it, and Midland is using it. We have something that we're going to be working on approaching to see if we can shut that whole thing down, because that's an abuse of the statute, as stated, and we're going to be working on that. So it's good to find out that the Capital One stuff is there, because we're going to need to contact all of the people that have been dragged into the MDLs.
All right,
we're going to have some fun with it. I'm not going to talk about it as far as what we're going to be doing, but because we don't want to let the cat out of the bags.
Well, just last thing here with regard to that. If anybody, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what I'm doing, so take it or leave it. But usually if they're violating the TCPA through some sort of what I've been discussing, they've usually got some state violations. So it's fun to just take them into that small claims and just, you know, tell them what you're going to sue them on the TCPA, and if they threaten that MDL, you just hammer them back down, remove that claim, refile a new one in a state claim, and say, we're taking it all the way. I'm playing hardball till you settle those TCPAs. They can't remove it. That's one way. That's how I did it.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway.
Being creative. Well, very good.
All right, thanks.
All righty.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
All righty. Let's go to 914. You have been unmuted for your question. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, everyone. My name is Cher. I'm really an initiate. I don't know much about this. Actually, my boyfriend, who died in an accident in this last summer, did this, went to court, all of that. And I guess so I don't, slow down the call here, because I know so little about it. Unfortunately, I didn't learn from him before he passed. But he was just curious. I'm in the New York area called Westchester County, and just curious to know. It seems that maybe, is this true? Just an overall question. Do the rules vary from state to state? Are the lawyers and are the systems different, more sophisticated? In other words, are there states where it's easier to do? I'm asking, if I start learning all of this that my boyfriend did and went into court and stood before the judges and all that, am I going to have as good a chance as some of the folks I heard earlier in this call, giving their good news at getting out of trouble? I'm about 32,000 credit card debt, and with the death of my partner of 22 years, I'm in really bad shape. So
there is any reason why you can't do what these other people have done. That's going to be my initial comment to you. The courts do vary from state to state, but if you're going to litigate, you're not going to have to learn the laws from all of the different places around the country. You would need to know the laws or the rules of the courts where you would be litigating. Federal court, if you're going to be there. The state courts, if you have to deal with the people there. So, and all that information is available.
So in other words, you do have specificity for each state. The very last thing I wanted to ask you, please, before you move on, I have one asset. I mean, can one protect? It's just, you know, about, you know, 50,000 of dividend shares. I mean, it's a cursing and a blessing. You know, I make a few hundred dollars every month. That's all from it. But is that a problem or not with your system?
There is a section within the website called Protecting Your Assets.
Okay.
You may want to give that a good peruse.
All right. That's great. And that can be done within, and in other words, I don't have to wait 2 years to be out of in the clear with protecting those assets.
Oh, no,
right?
No.
Great.
No.
Thank you. Thank you
so
much.
Don't go away. Don't go away.
All right.
I want to give you just a little bit of encouragement, and I think Jesse and Dave will both back me up on this. There have been some truly extraordinary decisions coming out of the New York courts. So you're not necessarily...
Beneficial to you.
Depending upon the individual courts that you're in, you're not necessarily in a bad environment.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You are very welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to... looks like we might have a Skype call here. It's just a bunch of ones. You are just unmuted. If you've just been unmuted, go ahead. And
you there?
Were you just unmuted?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Are you on Skype?
I'm not, but...
okay. The reason I'm asking is on the board, all it's showing is a bunch of ones. We're not getting an area code or phone number or anything.
Yeah,
that's because he's a debt collector, Dave.
my number. the number is actually it's blocked, so it's probably it.
Okay.
I actually tried to put in my hand in the queue for some good news, but I don't know. I guess it wasn't.
Well, I tried calling on you and nobody answered, so we moved on.
Oh, that was okay. Okay, that was it. All right, I was a little bit confused. All right, so have a case tomorrow. We jumped in it a little bit late with a HOA and sent them a debt validation letter, notice of dispute, and they responded with basically no validation, saying that this is what you owe, no history. And I already knew that they couldn't prove it because they had to validate from 1999, and you know they changed management companies, et cetera, et cetera. So I basically already knew that. So going in, my case is actually tomorrow. I wanted to just make sure I have all my Qs in a row with the violation of the FDCPA.
Yeah.
Yeah, my ducks in a row. That's right. With the FDCPA basically saying that everything should be dismissed based on the grounds of this violation. And then my question was for Jeff, actually, with this. What is considered, doing a lot of research, couldn't find what is considered debt validation in Montgomery County in the state of Maryland. So I know sometimes it changes from district to district.
Well, they basically would, you know, have to be able to show that all the fees that you owed and all the fees that you paid and produce an accounting. But if you're going after the HOA itself, I'm not sure that you have a cause of action because I believe they would be considered to be an original creditor. However, that does leave open the management company and the attorney who is attempting to collect them.
Or Jeff, I'm sorry, that's where I was heading. You're right, that's what I was thinking. You're right on the money with it.
You know, there is the possibility that you could make the case that the HOA is actually a third-party debt collector because it's acting on behalf of all the other co-owners, but I don't think you're going to get that one to fly.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is the HOA is hired an attorney to collect the debt. And so when I sent them...
Well, your cause of action would be against the attorney. Now, is there a management firm in there?
Yes, there is a management firm.
So you got a cause of action against the management firm and the attorney.
Okay, but
I don't
believe
you got a cause of action against the HOA itself.
Okay, all right. So I have a cause of action.
You know,
but in this particular case,
what kind of a hearing do you have tomorrow?
Me. Right, they're suing me, saying that we want you
okay.
to pay this. You see, that's the hearing. So they saying we want you to pay, and I said I asked you for validation, and you gave me nothing, basically. So you know, based on that. You know, you've
well,
got
then
to,
you're going to have to make the argument to the judge that you demanded validation under what statute,
mm-hmm.
and they have yet to comply, and that you
okay.
want the proceedings. We want the proceedings stayed until your federal action has been decided.
Okay.
Have you filed a federal?
So you haven't filed the federal action yet, have you?
I have not. No.
You now? How long you been listening to us?
I told you. Doggone it!
How long have you been listening to us?
It's
and what do we keep saying? The best defense is a good offense, right?
That's right. That's right.
And the offense is a federal lawsuit.
Okay.
Should we shake our fingers
right.
at you a little more, or not?
Yeah. I can take it.
Okay. We'll shake
okay.
it.
All right, so I know that I have cause of action, but in this case where the hearing is tomorrow, they're saying, well, you know, I sent you validation, you didn't respond. I know that you violated my FDCPA on this particular act. Can the hearing, basically, can there still be, is there a judgment or no, it can't be because they still
but
haven't
if,
done what they were supposed to do?
If they themselves, the HOA, is taking the action,
mm-hmm.
is the same attorney is... representing them as would be the one that contacted you?
That's correct.
And did you send him a dispute and demand for validation also?
That's correct.
Move to disqualify.
Move to disqualify. Okay.
Right. He's going to be called as a witness.
Okay. And you say he's going to be, the attorney's going to be called as a witness?
Yeah, because you demanded that he validate and he didn't do it, did he?
Right. Well, I sent the notice of dispute to the attorneys and then the validation to the HOA. The HOA never responded.
You separated the two out instead of sending both to both parties?
That's correct.
Why'd you do
well,
that?
I sent it to the management company and the attorney.
Okay.
I sent it to the management company and the attorney.
Now, did you send both the dispute and demand for validation to both of them?
No, I didn't.
Did you demand validation from the attorney?
Actually, hold on. I'm looking at my paperwork. Yes, I did. I did demand validation from the attorney.
Okay.
So I'm looking
you're going to have to call. You're going to call him as a witness, and you're going to demand that he be disqualified.
Okay. So call him as a witness.
This is short order for you to put together some sort of reasoning to argue
mm-hmm.
it in front of a judge. And I would have no hesitation that Jesse could go in and handle this kind of pleading. I'm not confident that you can.
Right.
Doesn't mean you can't. I'm just not
yeah,
confident.
There's a motion to disqualify. You're a member, correct?
Yes.
Okay, go in and do a search under the search function and see if you can find a motion to disqualify. I know it's there. That'll give you a good ground to start with.
Okay.
Right.
And even
and
if for some reason you can't find it, you can make a verbal motion before the court. You know, I move the court to disqualify the counsel as he will be a witness and will be testifying.
Exactly. So you're not,
so
right, you're not out
of
it.
If you somehow
can't
get it done on paper, you can do that, but you have to move the court. You can't just say, I want him disqualified. You have to, you know, tell the judge, I move the court to disqualify him because he is a witness and will need to testify.
And do not allow the judge to move on until he has ruled on that motion.
And one other important thing, please make a note of this. If he doesn't do what you ask, object. Because by objecting, you are making a record for appeal. If you don't object, that means you agree with his ruling, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Object. Okay. And then...
And my suggestion to you is get yourself invested in short-suffering and file your federal lawsuit.
Yeah. The only other thing I have for you is, do you have a court reporter lined up for tomorrow's hearing?
That's just what I was going to ask.
Do I have a
A court reporter.
What did you say?
Do you have a court reporter?
You need a
lined
court
up
reporter
for the
there.
Oh, okay.
Apparently you don't have one lined up. Okay. Well, what time is your hearing?
It's at 8 a.m.
Oh,
the judge won't show up in the courtroom until about 9:15, 9:30. But I don't think that's going to give you enough time to get the court reporter down there. Plus, if this is in district court as opposed to small claims court, they're going to the court reporters are going to be very hesitant to walk in there. And even if it's small claims court, they're going to be hesitant to walk in there. And the courthouse itself does not provide court reporters unless you're in circuit court.
Okay.
So you're going to have a tough time at this point getting a court reporter in there, because they're going to want their money up front before they even, you know, drive to the courthouse.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Jeff.
But that doesn't mean don't try. It's just that be aware that that could actually end up being your situation.
Okay.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure about that, Jeff. I know here in Florida, you can pay them at the courthouse. You know, they'll show up and then you just
Here,
I don't know how it works in Maryland.
Yeah, I got one bid from one court reporter. They wanted me to pay him $1,200 up front.
$1,200 for a court reporter? Were they out of their money?
Yeah, they didn't want my business, obviously.
Well, exactly, exactly.
And then
that's
the other
holy Lord.
Every last other one that I had contacted wanted to call the court to see if they could do that, because they had never been in district court to do court reporting.
Oh, wow.
And it's frowned on here.
What is the usual cost on it?
Frowned on.
Well, that's why you have to do this kind of homework beforehand. You can't wait. You've got to get all this stuff arranged. And my comments are for everybody out there to learn from. When you go to court, you need to take a court reporter with you. Don't depend on their records, because the court records have been modified before, the supposed transcripts. I've seen it personally in several cases where one thing was said and things were conveniently left out of the official quote-unquote transcript, or they were changed. So don't think that they don't play monkey business with that. You take your own so that you have an independent. And the other thing is, for those of you thinking about how much it costs, you pay a court reporter to show up. You're not required to purchase anything from them unless you need it. You can buy it then, but you're paying for them only for their time to show up and take the testimony that happens in the court that day. So it's not like you're getting locked into having to buy a whole transcript and everything. If you don't need it, you don't need to pay for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell you from firsthand experience up in Harford County, a judge said 3 times, I don't need evidence. The transcript said the recording was garbled.
Huh.
So you can count on that.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Just real quick. The alternative to that is if you're in a position where, you know, right now short notice you can't find one, take at least 2 other people with you as witnesses and have them take their legal pads and sit there, because they can make notes and they can do affidavits as to what was said.
Said and done. That's right.
Right, and, you know, they don't say, the judge said this or the judge said that. They say, the judge was heard to say.
Okay.
Okay.
But the main thing is you take people in lieu of a reporter, have at least two people that can do affidavits to back up what happened there. Because you can do an affidavit and two more. That's three people. And if all three of you say the same thing and it's different from what somebody else says, then they have a problem because it's 3-1. So anyway, that's a shortcut to not having a court reporter.
Okay. I'm looking at the site right now as we speak. Motion to disqualify. I see foreclosure, vacate, summary judgment, foreclosure resources, lawsuit.
If nothing else, if you can't find one there, look out on the web, do a Google.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. You got to do a search.
Motion
anyway.
To disqualify example.
Yeah.
Do a little looking.
Okay. Okay. And then my last question is, in Maryland, as a judicial state, if someone wants to put a lien on somebody, they have to go through the judicial process. Is that correct?
As far as HOA liens are concerned, they're treated the same as mechanics lien. All they have to do is fill out an affidavit and file it.
Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to know. All right.
All right.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Sorry.
All righty. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Let's go to 919. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you?
All right. I was calling because I spoke to you guys a couple of weeks ago, actually before the holidays, in reference to this Texas guaranteed case that's in federal court right now. You advised that I call the defense attorney in reference to the Rule 26F meeting. I received an order for discovery plan, and that's what it stipulates in there, that we have to have the Rule 26F meeting. And discovery plan must be submitted to the court within 14 days after. Now, I'm ready. I talked to the lawyer already, and he said, you know, he would meet with me after the holidays. I'm just, because I've never been in this situation, I was just curious what to expect or what I should be bringing. Should I be bringing my evidence at that time, or should I be waiting?
Well, for a 26F conference, that's what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. 26F conference is nothing more than a scheduling conference where you're going to see if you can agree on dates for things like final date for discovery, final date for filing motions in limine, adding parties, so on and so forth. What it is a layout of how the case is going to proceed forward to trial. And all it is agreeing on dates, seeing if they want a possibly a protective order for discovery, things like that. And you can generally take let the attorney take the lead. And a lot of times the attorneys, if they say, well, you know, do you want to do the scheduling report for our meeting, I don't know if you want to do it and get the billable hours, you can go ahead and do it. Generally, the attorneys on the other side have done them in just about all the cases I've had. However, I recently had a situation where I mentioned that, and I had a snippy lawyer say, I don't do things the plaintiffs are required to do and bill my clients for it, but yet I found evidence of where she just bills her clients up the yin-yang. So anyway, it's not a big deal. It's a matter of setting dates.
Okay.
So don't be afraid of it. It's no big deal.
All right. Yeah.
Actually, you could ask them what they propose, and then you could tell them to, if you can put that in a report, send it to me. I'll look it over, and then if you've got questions on it after you get it, because that's your meeting, you confer on that, and then there's a period of time after that before it has to actually, the report has to be filed with the court.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
Don't let it intimidate.
All right, I'm ready.
It's not bad.
Oh, I'm ready to go. I'm just kind of curious for that next step because I put all the pieces in place. I'm like, okay, I want to stay on top of it so there's no wiggle room.
Yep.
Yeah,
no, that's,
I know
that's
that they're gonna try to pull some stuff out their butt.
You never know what they're gonna do. But you really don't.
Dave, wouldn't it be a good idea to possibly to suggest that no other motions be heard other such as dispositive motions, motions in limine, motions to dismiss, motions to add parties and whatnot. None of those are to occur before the completion of discovery?
Well, no, you can't do a blanket like that. They won't do it. Generally, there's layouts for those kind of dates.
I understand, but I'm just saying, in context, he doesn't want to allow them to do that because if they see a neophyte here, they're liable to just schedule things before the end of discovery, and he doesn't want to allow that to happen.
Yeah, well, I don't think the court would do that. Remember, this is something that goes to the court. The court looks at the dates, and if it's completely out of order, the court is going to change it.
Okay.
Yeah, they sent me a discovery plan, which is kind of like a blank format for you to fill in the dates and what you guys agreed to.
Exactly.
I think that's what they want to be followed.
Well, that's
right.
Probably the preliminary to the 26F.
Yeah, in the jurisdiction I'm in, they actually have templates that they send you, and all you got to do basically is fill in the dates. And it tells you, you know, this date 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after, 6 weeks after, 12 weeks after, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it gives you fantastic guidelines. Now, here again, that's the jurisdiction I happen to be in. That doesn't mean it's the same in yours. But if they gave you a document with some guidelines on it, you know, just look at it and from a common sense standpoint and see. And what I did in the very first one that I did, I let the attorney take the lead. He says, well, you know, do you have any proposed dates? I said, well, you know, why don't you tell me what you want and so on and so forth. And we went through it that way. But I had him type it all up. And then they have to send it to you for you to peruse. And, you know, you can look at it, and if something doesn't seem right, then, you know, you can maybe come and ask questions or something like that before you've got to let them know, yeah, that's okay. I'm fine with submission of that. Because usually what I do anyway, and I think most of the other guys do, is when it comes time for submission, you just have them send you the final draft if they're doing it of what they have. And if it's okay with you, then you give them the approval via email to send it to file it electronically with your electronic signature on it. That way you don't have to, you know, do all the mailing with actual signatures and stuff.
Right.
That's generally the way it's done.
Okay, cool. All right, I appreciate the feedback. I did have one other question. I've been receiving several calls for my son's mother, I guess, in reference to her student loan. And, like, we're not even in a relationship together. We haven't been together in, like, 3 years. And they've been calling me for about the last 2 years. So would I just approach that with a notice of intent to sue?
Well, you have to determine. Are they violating? What are they doing? Are they calling your cell phone? Are they using robocalls?
Are they leaving automated messages?
You know,
they're definitely calling my cell phone. They're not leaving automated messages, but I would allege they're using an auto dialer. They do have somebody who does speak on the message, but they don't say, you know, that they're debt collector. And on top of that, they're not even looking for me. They say that they're looking for this person. I heard earlier on the call, another caller said that, you know, they had a cell phone in which they got a new number and the old number was being called for. And, you know, they went in after them with that. So I was figuring, is that roughly the same guideline?
Well, you got to be careful. You got to be careful what you're doing. You're hearing somebody say something, so you figure just because they did something that you can do it. You need to study the TCPA. Yeah,
that's why I'm asking the question. I actually have studied the TCPA. I actually kind of know it verbatim. But that's why I wanted to verify, because I mean they are calling my cell phone. They don't have my permission. I don't know who they are, and like I said, they're calling somebody else.
Yeah. Now, have you ever answered the phone when they called?
No, I have not.
Okay. My suggestion to you would be when they call to answer it and see if there is a person immediately on the phone.
Okay.
The reason that I'm telling you that is if there's a little delay, you answer it and you say hello, and then there's like, you know, a couple seconds delay. That's showing it's a robocall. That way you can say, I answered the phone and there was no one there. And that's giving you prima facie evidence of a robo-dialed call, and you would allege then that all of the calls have been made the same way.
Right.
It's just, yeah, I mean, you can allege right now it was made with ATDS equipment, but then you would have to go through and do discovery to prove and have them, you know, cough up all the records and everything. Whereas if you can actually say, yes, I answered the phone and there was nobody there right away, they came on later, then you have that evidence and you can say, look, they weren't there. They came on afterwards, so it obviously was a ATDS call.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay. if they come on after, you know, if after that delay and they start speaking, will I just address them and let them know that they're looking for the wrong person or something? Or
yeah, well, they're going to say, is Susie Smith there? No, Susie Smith isn't here. Well, do you know where she is? No, I don't. You see what I mean? I mean, you don't volunteer a lot of information, but at least that way you're being able to pin it down and get a better idea of exactly whether it is a blatant robocall because they aren't there or whether it's something that's coming in afterwards.
All right.
Okay. Okay.
Appreciate that.
All righty. That take care of you?
All right. Yes, it does.
All righty. Thanks much. Boy, we're getting a lot of noise there. Okay. Let's go to 323. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Happy New Year, guys. This is Justin calling from Rhode Island.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Thank you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, buddy.
I'm kind of new. Jesse, I've been eating elephant for about 30 days.
Yeah, be careful. Don't choke on it, man. That's the problem.
Yeah, I had to kind of duct tape my brain inside of my skull with all the information. It's exciting. I'm learning so much. I have notebooks. I have files. Everything downloaded. I'm reading and listening as much as possible. I've got about 8 separate files, excuse me, going right now with different companies, third-party debt collectors, some of them multiple callers, that sort of thing. And I'm kind of anxious to get my feet wet and send my first notice of intent to sue letter off by the end of this week. I'm just going through all the information, putting, you know, all the Fair Debt Collector Practices Act violations, TCPA violations. One of them calling me, been different numbers on 10 different phone calls, same area code, different numbers, but it's the same company. I've traced it all back. It's saying it's a law association. Would that be any different procedure for the letters or, you know, if and when it comes time to form a complaint, would you guys recommend a federal court over a local court?
I have a question.
Sure.
Where are they calling you?
I don't know.
I'd be asking them, yeah.
Said, I've answered the phone.
Don't you think it might be a good idea to find out?
Yeah. I have answered the phone every time they called, and most of the time it will just hang up. It'll be the delay, and it'll hang up before it. And
oh, okay.
That's a robocall, no question.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
And if they're calling your cell phone doing that,
yeah.
First of all, you haven't given them your consent. Second of all, they're demonstrating it's a robocall. Oop, they're on the hook.
Yep.
That's kind of where
it's that clear cut right there.
Right. You might want to not get into the debt with them and just sort of deal with them as though they were a telemarketer without saying that.
Okay.
Because you don't know why they're calling you.
Well, what I do, just so that you understand what I've got, and I've got almost 170 calls on one phone. When they call and I answer it, I'll say, don't call this phone or quit calling this phone. And then they hang up. I write notes for every single call that I do that. Answered, told them, as stated, do not call this telephone number, and then they hung up on me. And when I write the complaint, if I can't get a settlement without that, when I write that complaint, I will itemize every single call, and I will state on that particular call that I answered it, and I stated, do not call this number anymore, and the other party hung up.
Okay.
So, see, you're locking it in right there.
Yeah.
And there's no such thing as too much evidence.
Yeah, I do. I have the phone records all printed out individually, and I also have pictures of the phone calls on my cell phone, on my tablet, that I have a whole
good
file, what Jesse
good
said.
Did you Google the law firm?
Yeah, it's called Evans Law Associates.
New York.
Yes.
Correct. You're a debt collector.
I thought so.
I have
because
firsthand experience with them, and their check's cash.
Oh, yeah. By the looks of the website,
the
bank, I kind of had that feeling. They look like a cheesy. I think what they are is a debt collector under the guise or under the direction of an attorney, is what it's saying.
Yeah, it's actually a law firm that behaves as a debt collector.
Okay.
Yeah, there's many of those, so no big deal.
Yeah.
Nothing new.
Okay, I'm going to get that off this week. One other quick question, guys. Would you, I'm trying to get my head around actually forming and filing a complaint if and when the time comes for that to court.
It's all that noise, David.
Yeah,
it's
I'm thinking it's coming from
sorry
Jeff's phone. Go ahead.
There we go. We're good.
Okay, so is there on the website, again, I'm just trying to get all this information in my brain cells, is there, I've never filed or formed or written a complaint before through court. Is there some kind of a format? I know you guys have some sample docs online.
Okay, as you're going to want to go and study the Summer Slam.
Okay.
Not this past summer, but the summer before, that walks you through the complete process, and that is related to dealing with credit pulls, but you can adapt it to your stuff. But it goes through the whole process of how you go about writing a complaint, all the way from A to Z.
Okie dokie. Summer Slam. Got it. Okay. Well, hopefully next time my guys I call in, I'll have some good news, and I'm kind of excited to get going on this.
Great.
Yeah.
Glad to have you joining us.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for all your hard work. I'll be in touch. Appreciate it.
All righty. You bet. Thank you. All right. Let's go to 760. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you for accepting my call for the second time.
Sure.
I've been listening to you guys for on and off for a couple months and stuff, and then one of my questions, I know I've been listening here, and everybody's about phone calls, you know, but, you know, you can sue under phone calls. I got a student loan that I need to deal with and stuff, and they only send me letters. How do you guys deal with the student loans, too, from debt collectors?
Who's sending you the letters?
Go ahead, Larry.
Who's sending you the letters?
First, it was, I can't remember the name, it's Premier something. It's actually like they're associated with the educational, something with education, with Sally May. They're actually associated with Sally May.
Okay, are they a debt collector or a guarantor or the original owner or the new owner or what?
Actually, the letter does say we are debt collectors on the bottom of the letter.
Well, there you go. They're a debt collector. Okay.
Okay.
So, did you send them a debt validation letter?
No, I just got this 2 days ago. So that's okay. One of the things. I have a generic little debt validation letter that I send these debt collectors, you know. And that's why my question was because, you know, and then actually one of the things was the letter from Sally May says that the contract has been sold to, it mentions that company's name, Premier or something, you know. Can't remember their name
mm-hmm.
right now. And it actually does mention that the contract was sold to them on a letter. And then,
okay, that's actually a very good thing because they're going to have to prove that you owe them a student loan now. and they're not going to be able to do that, at least not very easily. Are they calling you? Have you checked your credit report?
No, they don't call me, but you know what? I do. I'm cleaning my credit right now with this company called Lexington Law Firm. And, you know, and so they're just sending letters and letters and letters. So, but I did check my credit report, and it does show up on my credit.
Okay. Just as a word of advice, they're not doing anything that you can't do yourself for free.
I know that. You know, I kind of figured that out because when I was listening to you guys about a month ago, I was like, oh, you know, these guys are not doing anything. They're just charging me, you know,
right,
monthly.
They're sending you letters, and the reality is under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the credit reporting agencies are not even obligated to respond to those letters because they don't come from you, and they have ways of telling. You know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, sometimes they're ignored, but you can do it just as effectively and a lot more flexibly than they can.
I have noticed that, too, because all the letters, some of them, I mean, they've sent like 48-something letters, right? And some of them have just, you know what, they respond back, or we don't have to respond to you. It's straightforward.
Correct.
To say we don't have to respond to you. It's like, whoa,
yeah.
What do you mean?
They're, you know, when that happens, they're not even the Fair Credit Reporting Act. You can't even sue them after that happens. So I think you know what you need to do with Lexington.
Oh, absolutely. I know, absolutely. So, I mean, that right there just tells me everything, you know.
Yeah. But going back
you
to
know,
the original situation, I would just send the letter, the debt validation letter, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
how much is the –
go ahead.
How much are they seeking? How much do they want from you?
$19,000.
Oh, okay. Yep.
It's an old
wait and see what happens.
Larry, he said he's using his letter of his own. You might want to verify that that's sufficient.
Oh, right. Where did you get the letter, the debt validation letter that you're about to send?
See, back in 2010 when I got foreclosed on, I met some people, like we all lost a home together, like different people, and we met this person who does these letters, and we kind of passed it along. It's just a generic letter, and it's been working for me for every time I send them, but, you know, and I put little codes and laws and things like that, and, you know, but they never respond back. It's generic. I mean, I could email it to you guys. You could see it. I got no problem with that.
Well, no. I mean, there's hundreds and thousands of those around. As long as it's generic and as long as you're seeking debt validation or verification, you know, it really doesn't even matter what words you use, as long as when it gets to the point, you know, if you take it to a court, they're going to view it as a request to validate the alleged debt.
Yeah. Just, no, but you know what? Go ahead.
Patriot stuff.
You know what? We started with that. I went to this in Riverside, actually. I'm from San Diego County. I went to this thing when I first lost my home. I went to this Patriot thing. It was different. It was new to me, all that stuff. And it was like, I don't know if this thing works. I kind of walked away from it because, you know, it was just weird to me to see those kind of things. And that's where I met those people there. And
you
all walked away from that.
Yeah, anytime you see something like that, ask them to show you the proof that it works.
Yeah. Oh, I did it. I mean, as you guys know, I don't know if the main guy is in jail right now for stuff like that, but it was funny.
Oh, yeah, we know.
Dave
knows the main
right
guy.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the opposite of working as far as I'm concerned. I don't want to do anything that's going to put me in jail.
Yeah, see, that was new for me. We were just, you know, desperate for fighting our foreclosure homes, you know, and which I lost my home. But, you know, yeah, we walked away from it, so, you know.
Oh, well.
But, you know, one other thing, the funny thing, you know, you guys were talking about the clerks or, the court reporters. And when I found my home in 2010, and I had put, you know, I put the judge on the spot for, you know, asking if he was a trustee to my case. Well, when I asked him multiple times for that, when I requested for my court report from them, it said dot, 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 dot. And there were so many dots in there. It's like, Yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll put in their own wordings and things like that. So, and I actually paid for my reports, but it was just funny that, you know, you got to take your own court reporter, and if you just get something from them, they're in the same, they're in their side. You got to get your own people, you know. And I did it, and actually I did it twice, and they both, you know, they changed the wording on my court reports.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Wow.
And that was one of the things I couldn't believe it, that how bad the court system really is.
Oh, it's beyond, yeah.
Oh, it's, I mean, you go in good faith, and it's like, what the heck?
Yeah, it's bad.
So,
yeah,
so
some places are worse than others, but you got to be real careful of that. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, we got a lot of people in the queue. We got to keep rock and rolling here.
Yeah, yep. Let's keep moving.
All righty.
You got a new client. A new member there.
Well,
thank you.
Welcome.
Appreciate it. Welcome aboard. That's right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to area code 910. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Is that me?
If you were just unmuted, that's you.
Yeah, I guess so then. I'm hearing it. Questions for you? I'm just getting started, actually, with credit card debt and a personal loan. And I'm only like 30 to 60 days late. And I want to know if they can freeze my checking account. Because my Social Security goes in to that account, and then my house payment goes out, you know, right out of the savings account.
Well, if they get judgments and all that, and what state do you live in? That's really the first question.
North
Carolina. All right. You got to check your law. I don't know if North Carolina has... had a household or not.
Yeah, well, it's me and my wife together, but it's only
wait a minute.
Generally,
North Carolina, wait a minute, doesn't North Carolina have, like, no garnishments at all?
I don't
what
remember.
What do they do? Let me take a look.
That might be.
I don't think they can garnish you at all.
Well, that'd be
That's
the only thing I'm really worried about, fighting this. That's...
Well, one of the things, there's something that everybody should know. A lot of times when you have a credit card with a bank, I'll just throw an example, a Bank of America, you get a credit card with them, they've got fine print in there where if you fail to pay your credit card payments, they can go to your other accounts and take the money out to make your payments. And a lot of people don't know that because it's, of course, buried. They don't want you to know that. And my suggestion that I always make to people is if you've got an institution where you're, you know, defaulting on credit cards or whatever, and you've got your checking savings with that same bank, pull your money out of there and move it to another institution. Use another bank so that you don't run into that issue.
Yeah, I've kind of done all that. And actually, my wife actually moved and got another checking account with the credit union where this is, you know. And there's a couple cards that got her name on. The rest of it's all in my name. But that's what we're trying to protect that because my Social Security gets dumped into that account and then pays the mortgage.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you open accounts at a different institution and have your Social Security sent to that so that they can't tag that account. The only way that they could possibly do a garnishment would be they'd have to go through, sue you, get a judgment and everything, and obviously you'd know all of that was happening.
Yeah, well, I was right because North Carolina's one of them weird states. Texas is like... There are like eight of them across the country that don't allow it.
I think there was only
and
like
North Carolina,
three right there, Jesse.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a few of them, man. North Carolina, it says right here, right from the law center over there, Fabricius, Eric Fabricius. North Carolina is one of the few states that does not generally permit wage garnishment as a means to collect a debt. Things like child support, taxes, and defaulted student loans are sometimes collected by garnishment.
So it should be that wage garnishment does exist. It's just not readily available. A creditor attempting to collect a credit card account or a medical bill would not have wage garnishment as a standard remedy in North Carolina.
Well, but wage garnishment and garnishment of a bank account are two different things.
Yeah, but if he's retired, they can't touch that Social Security. That would be his wages, per se. That's his retirement. They can't touch that, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, they can't. That's what I was pretty sure. They couldn't touch my Social Security.
The only one that can steal from you like that is the IRS, who they steal from you to begin with, and they steal more. So.
Yeah,
right.
I don't even follow anymore.
Yeah, the IRS will snatch your Social Security. We know this, don't we, Dave, Terry?
Yeah,
we know.
Yes, I do.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more question. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. We own vehicles. Can they put liens on the titles of them vehicles?
You'd have to check your state law on that. I don't know.
Can you tell me where I might go find that?
Yeah, just type it
another,
in. I just did on Google.
There's another avenue for that too.
What's that?
Put a friendly lien on it.
Yeah, it just takes too long, though.
Well, it takes about an hour and a half to go down and drop it off at DMV, and it's recorded.
I'll look into that, then.
They treat it like a mechanic lien.
Yeah, isn't there information in the
it says it right
protecting
here with
your
the
assets?
Yeah, see, a judgment, a creditor may seek a sale of property or leverage a judgment lien on real estate.
Yeah, but like I say, that's after they go through a judicial process and get a judgment. And you all is happening, right?
Yeah, I thought I read something somewhere where they couldn't cross state lines. Like this credit union is out of Corning, New York, and we're in North Carolina.
Well, that's not true. For instance, I sued Tate and Curlin. They defaulted. I'm waiting for the judge to order the attorney fees for Marshall, and then I'm going to go collect over there. I'll ask the court to issue me a writ there, and I'll fly my butt up there and empty out their office.
Right. That's another state. That's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so I could care less. I'm in Florida, but I'm still going to go collect up there.
Right. They can. I believe that's what domesticating a judgment isn't that the terminology,
yeah.
Jesse?
Exactly. So
right.
You know, you do have other options though with your cars. You put them in an LLC. You do certain things like that, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah. That's. Are you a member?
Not yet. Not yet. I started letters through another outfit. The three letters. I was going to send three letters and for validation. But
you only need one letter for validation.
Yeah, I know. I printed out your letters. I was looking at them up. It's a 30-day deal. Wait for 30 days and then send a judgment thing. But I'm still dealing with the banks. I'm not dealing with debt collectors yet. You know, because they're just calling me friendly letters and saying, you're 30 days late, you need to pay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
But that's what happened when I defaulted on my stuff years ago, and I sent they were absolutely blowing my phone up to the tune of about 40 calls a day. And
me too, right now.
I sent validation letters to them, and within 10 days the calls dropped to probably 3 to 5 a day, and that was to the original creditors on all of them.
Well, actually, American Express. I read that off of your letter about cease and desist, and they haven't called me since I told the guy on the phone that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You're probably looking at one of my old letters, maybe off Angela's site or something.
I forget how I got there. I linked to it, and I found the two letters.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's going to be an old one. I don't use that anymore because that chases people away, and we want to make money on them. So if you get, you need to get yourself into the website and start learning what we do, and you'll find out that it can put money in your pocket instead of just chasing people away.
Oh, yeah, I've been listening. I've been listening to Terry since Freedom Reigns when she was with Drake.
Yeah, okay,
Drake,
good.
When she was working off her porch.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Terry in
okay,
the back.
Okay, well,
poop.
I appreciate the info. Yep. I appreciate all the information and work you guys do.
All right.
Thanks for the info.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Let's go to 619. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing good. Dave, this is Julio. I spoke with you yesterday, and you suggested I call back today and post my question up for Jesse.
Okay.
So I'd like to say Happy New Year's to begin with. And my case is it's a mortgage deal, and my adversary is Bank of America, N.A., and I've got a pending lawsuit that's going on right now that's kind of in limbo waiting for a judge's ruling.
Well, is that you against them or them against
yeah,
you on that
against,
pending?
I'm against them.
Okay.
And just yesterday I opened up some mail that had collected over the holidays, and I got a monthly statement from a new company. So it appears that they've sold the servicing rights to a company called Resurgent Mortgage Servicing.
Yeah, okay.
And an interesting thing is there's also a notice that I got from an insurance company saying that the lender placed hazard insurance partial cancellation notice, and it says the Insurance Bank of America NA obtained for the property location showed above is canceled effective 12/13 of last year. And the reason it states, it says loan paid in full. And so my guess is they've sold it off somehow, but the way that they describe it is, it says, we are pleased to advise you that effective 12/19/13, Bank of America NA has placed your account with Resurgent Mortgage Services, a division of Resurgent Capital Services, LP, for servicing.
Okay. Yeah, that's servicing, collecting the monthly payments, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. So the loan number changed, which is the first time it's ever done that.
Usually when they change servicers, they have to do that. People ask that question all the time, and they get confused with it. And I still don't understand why. If Dave had your account and he has a history on your account for 10 years, he has to have a reference number for you that's specific to your account. So once it's transferred to me on March 16th of 2013, I have to have a specific number that's referenced to you. I can't use Dave's number. That's his number.
But
I don't know why the people get confused with that.
Yeah, it's never changed in
it
the past.
It doesn't matter. It's not a big deal.
Which isn't a big deal. I'm not
yeah.
too concerned about
it. No, I'm
numbers.
Trying to explain that for everybody else's benefit, not just you.
Okay. So anyway, I was just curious as to whether, since they're in litigation and Bank of America NA is the servicer and that's who I'm suing, isn't there some legalities that they have to hold on to it till the lawsuit is resolved?
I don't know. That's a very good question. What is your suit? What is the basis of your suit?
Well, it's a FDCPA.
They're still on the hook for that.
What's
yeah,
that?
That would not matter. They're still on the hook for that, no matter what. Once you ring the bell, you can't unring the bell. So it's irrelevant whether you have the loan or not.
Now,
follow?
I was going after them. I think it was FDCPA, the 1692, I think E or F, where they're basically trying to take the property. Because my statute of limitations for the 1692G had already, you know, passed.
Well, one can't not pass on the other.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It's a year, period.
Even if they're still attempting to take the house?
Well, then there's still other things they're violating. One can't pass without the other passing, is what I'm saying. Make sense?
No. I thought they were separate.
Okay. No, there's no separation at all.
You have to look at what is happening. What are they doing where they are violating the law within a year of when you filed your suit?
Oh, well, since the suit was filed all collection activities has ceased.
No, you misunderstood what I'm saying. I'm not talking since you filed the suit. The suit had to be filed for a violation within 1 year prior to the filing date of the suit.
In my suit, what I used as the violation was the notice of trustee sale that posted on my gate. And because that was the most recent activity, which fell into, I think it was like 1692 F, E or F, where, you know, trying to take property. Because G had already passed. Like, it was beyond a year.
Well, no, wait a minute. You're getting confused here. Your G had already passed. It's a matter of, was it a collection action? What activity specifically did they take that violated the law? You're saying, oh, well, I think it was F or something. What specific? There's nothing that says anything about taking selling property in 1692F. So what specifically was it that they did that you claim is a violation?
I'd have to pull that up. I wasn't ready for that. My question was more about what to do with this new servicer that's stepping in and whether legally they could be substitute or, you know, they could be doing this while there's a lawsuit in, you know.
Yeah, that doesn't, again, the collection of the debt and the manner of collection have nothing to do with each other. Meaning an FDCPA lawsuit, if they violate a debt collection law or part of that statute, absolutely irrelevant. The underlying debt is absolutely irrelevant. It's not even relevant whether it's valid or not. You violated the law, now you're going to pay. So the underlying debt's irrelevant. And again, I'll say it easily so everybody can understand. When you ring the bell, you can't unring it, no matter what. Once I done violated, there's no way to unviolate. Just because I moved the debt over doesn't mean that I unviolated. I'm still held accountable for that action I took.
Now, if somebody new is trying to collect it and they do something that's in violation of the statute, then you have an action against them as well, do you not?
Well, that brings up my next question, which is, you know, within 5 days of the initial communication, they're supposed to send me a debt validation. Isn't that correct?
No, you're supposed to send them a debt validation.
Well, no, he's
right. Talking about within 5 days of first communication.
It's a Dunning letter, not a validation.
Well, I guess it's the Miranda letter or whatever. Maybe it's called the Dunning
letter. Right, it's a Dunning letter.
Yeah, but in essence, that's what it is. Within 5 days of first communication, a debt collector is required to send you the terminology they use, a verification letter saying, you know, you've got 30 days to dispute this. If you do, we will give you the name of the creditor, so on and so forth. And then it's got to have the mini Miranda on it.
Okay,
right.
So then if that's all it needs to be, because it doesn't state anything on here, it lists like RESPA, a couple of things off of RESPA, but it doesn't list anything off of, like, the 1692G. It does mention, you know, unless you dispute within 30 days, which is the Miranda.
That's what I was just talking
about.
That's it then. So now just need to send them a debt validation letter.
Right. A notice of dispute. That's right.
I'm sorry, say that again?
A notice of dispute.
Okay. Now, on the last call, I heard that there's a bunch of different, you know, dispute letters that have been used. Is there anything more recent? The one I last used was probably a year and a half ago. Do you guys have something?
No, the one that's on the site's good. There's nothing. I try to keep it simple, stupid, so you don't want
me to. There's actually two on the site, and I'm preferring to use the simplest version now.
Yeah.
There was one.
A short one.
Yeah.
How many pages? Like, one page or two
one,
pages?
I think
two,
it's two, isn't
yeah.
it? One or two.
Yeah. I mean, it's so short.
I think there was one that was about four and one that I think is two.
No, they're not near that long. One is two pages along with a form that you ask them to fill out, which are they're under no obligation whatsoever to fill out. It's more or less a waste of time. And like Dave was saying before, you don't want them to think you're too smart.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't give away what you know.
Right. Don't lay it down with a lot of case law and threats and, you know, all this and that. Just make it very simple and ask for what they're required to give you and leave it at that.
Okay, and then just see if they provide what's – because in here they state if you want a QWR, submit it, send it to this different address or something.
Okay, well, now you're trying –
that's pretty standard.
Yeah, would you suggest sending them a QWR there, Jesse?
Yeah,
Larry?
Yeah, you do that. You do it all. Notice
that's what I was thinking, yeah.
And a QWR, they're two complete different requests.
Correct.
Uh-huh. But I shouldn't do them both at the same time. Do one, wait for them to respond, and then later on if I need
I wouldn't. I would do one and then wait 3 or 4 days and send out another. Doesn't matter. They're two separate, different, you know, complete different animals.
Probably going to different addresses. You know, make sure that you send the QWR to the right address, but the other one you can send to their general address.
Yeah. And there's case law that says no matter what, if they receive it anywhere, I don't care if it's their janitor, they're still liable. So, yeah.
All right, cool. I think that'll do it.
All righty. Very good.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, keep
talking.
And
I will ask you, I neglected to ask people, I remind people that when after you are on and I mute you, would you please hit 1 on your keypad on your phones to take yourselves out of the queue? That would be helpful to us. All right, let's go to 281. You have been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yes, a question regarding current creditors using auto dialers and calling cell phone without consent. So wouldn't that be a violation of TCPA?
Yeah,
as long as you didn't give them consent, like if maybe at the time that you got the loan that you gave them a landline and somehow they managed to get a hold of your cell phone and they're calling that,
right,
then you got a violation. Right. But if you gave it to them, then you gave them express consent.
What if they just got it?
So what is the situation that you have, just briefly?
Well, what it is actually it's like a current creditor, and it's I think one is like DirecTV, and they call multiple times. At the exact same time, like each day. So I knew then. I said it has to be a machine that's dialing because it's the same time each day, maybe 3 or 4 times in a day.
Yeah, but did you give them your cell phone number?
I never gave them my cell phone number as a means to contact
you.
No.
Did you ever give them your – did you give them your cell phone number, yes or no?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if I did or not.
Okay. The way to cover yourself on that is to write them a letter and tell them that you are revoking any consent to call – phone number 1234567. I would not put cell phone number in that letter.
Okay.
I am hereby revoking my consent for you to call 1234567 effective upon your receipt of this letter.
Okay. What if I had a landline at the time, which I no longer have, and that was a number that I had given them, and I had called them from a cell phone, and what they do sometimes is go in and just log. They go in and capture the number and call you back.
That's not giving them express consent. Absolutely not.
Okay. Okay. I didn't think that it was. Okay. Okay. That was the question I had. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Okay. Let's go to 414. And again, when I mute you, if you've gotten done with your questions, if you'll hit 1 on the keypad in your phone, see if that'll drop you out of the queue.
Yeah, 281-323.
We've still got them on there, but I've mentioned it. I don't know as it's dropping it. But 414, you've been unmuted. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hello?
Hello, 414.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, I was calling about some questions about a mortgage with Bank of America. And,
sure.
I had filed an administrative remedy demand, and I had got a notary witness certificate of judgment of dishonor, notice of performance. I was just calling to find out what.
Yeah, don't do it. Just throw it all away and start over. Go to our site and join. You're not going to get anywhere with that.
Yeah,
it's
the administrative stuff is not going
to
work.
Yeah. I just get to your. I'll tell you right to the point. Just don't even fool with it.
Okay. Yeah. Was, I faxed the because I had got an email and I faxed. They told me to fax the note over so they could take a look at the note.
They told you to fax a note over?
No, I'm talking about from what lies in your debt.
Yeah, that's for the securitization side to see if it was
securitized. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I faxed it over, but for some reason they said they didn't get it. So I'm going to fax it back over again so they can take a look at the mortgage.
There you go.
Okay. So what did you suggest that I do to start over?
You need to just join the site because that's none of that stuff works. There's no enforcement. See, that's the whole problem with it, that there's no way to enforce the damn thing. So once they screw up or whatever happens, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's
so,
nothing you can do.
Okay, so like my time frame is because we haven't paid in about maybe a year.
Okay.
And I don't know, do I still have time to join and
yeah,
still can pay?
And start on it
what,
now.
What kind of actions are they taking relative to your non-payment? Are they doing anything yet?
Well, you know, they're not doing anything yet. I just seen somebody come out and take some pictures of the house a couple days ago.
Where are you located?
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. I don't know.
And one property they already has they already took in it, you know, in the way the sheriffs kicked the doors in and put us out.
But did they go through the courts? Are you a judicial or non-judicial state there? I can't remember what Wisconsin is.
I think it's a judicial state, but it never showed in the records downtown that a foreclosure action was taken. I kept following up, and it never was in the records until after they put us out the property.
You never received any notice of default, foreclosure, nothing?
Nothing. And then when I asked the judge, he said they didn't have to send out nothing.
Well, you need to look at your laws in the state of Wisconsin then.
Well, yeah, that's again, Dave, you know.
Yeah.
You're not a member. You need to understand that there's laws that are well up and above the laws of Wisconsin. There's federal law.
Yeah.
There's laws right. You know, there's certain agreements within your mortgage and your note that have to be met. If not, they can't foreclose. And if you don't know all this, this is what happens. You got to get in. So I said, you got to get in there now. You should have been in there a year ago. But get in there. Get in there now and start learning. I mean, there's no other way around it. There really not.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll join it. I'm going to join as soon as possible.
Yeah, well, every day that you don't, it's going to cost you, I promise you.
Yeah, and the places you want to go once you get in there is Saving Your Home section and the Foreclosure Bash.
Okay, okay, thank you.
You bet, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to 423.
Hey, Dave. This is Nick.
There you go. Good evening.
This is Nick again, calling to talk to Jesse tonight per your statements last night. Basically, Jesse, the question is, dealing with my dad's rental property that was in Tennessee that went into foreclosure. They sold it at auction last year, March sometime. We had started, we put in a complaint outlining specifically the conditions precedent as well as FDCPA and other TILA violations as well. They've put in a partial motion to dismiss, get rid of the FDCPA as well as the TILA violations. The FDCPA, they're trying to get rid of because they say that they're not a debt collector, and they give case law that shows that they've ruled that banks are not debt collectors when collecting their own debt, and they've the only thing they've provided is a blank note with no endorsements or anything, just a note with their name on it and the alleged signatures of my dad. So if that's the case, then there's nothing really to put in as a refute on that.
There isn't. Not if it's the original lender.
Okay. And then with the TILA, they're saying that it's past the one-year statute of limitations, so it's null and void as well. If I read...
Probably is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's just clarification then.
Now, what you said they were doing
there's
a partial.
Count one has... The partial has to do with, because count one has to do with conditions precedent, which I know was not met. In particularly, their notice of default was deficient.
Well, then they can't foreclose, but that still might not be. That would be an affirmative defense. That wouldn't be a...
Well, they already foreclosed on them, Jesse. That's one of the problems.
Yeah. They've already gone through with it and taken the house. Actually, it was sold at auction back to the bank, the same bank that we're fighting right now.
They made a credit bid.
Right.
Is basically what they did.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
They're
coming after them for a deficiency or what they're, claiming they're owed.
Yeah, you said that was, about 50 grand approximate? But their motion to dismiss is getting out of the FDCPA because their original creditor, and the TILA because of the statute of limitations, but they are not arguing the conditions precedent, correct?
Right.
I mean, that's the gist of the whole situation?
Yeah.
Okay. Well... See, that's the thing. If they did not perform the conditions precedent, then the judgment would be a void judgment, would it not, Jesse?
But boy, that'd be a tough one. Get a judge, just, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a non-judicial state, so Tennessee is. So they just this non-judicially.
Yeah, but you got to go judicially.
Right, and we did, and we filed this case, back in 2012 or 11 or something like that.
But you didn't file that before the sale of the property, correct?
It was filed before the sale of the property, yes.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Okay, so this has been going on that long. This isn't just over the deficiency.
No. Apparently not.
No.
Okay, we need clarity on exactly, what the situation was with your suit. So you filed in the state court against them on conditions preceding plus the other things, which turn out to be moot. And so you still have that action basically arguing the foreclosure itself on conditions preceding. How was it that they were allowed to move forward and take the property, do a sale, and then move forward if you had a suit going in the state court?
I'm kind of curious.
Great question. This was back before we had found out about you guys and kind of knew what we were doing. My dad just got in there and started throwing rocks, as Jesse says. And so then the judge gave him the opportunity to amend his complaint, and that's when we kind of ramped it up with everything that we knew here. And, again, this was, after the fact. So
Well, what do you mean after the fact? After what fact?
After they had already started the process and were carrying on with their
Yeah, but before the sale, though, right?
Right, before the sale, correct.
Yeah. The problem I have right here is the fact that you filed suit against them on conditions preceding. Let's forget the other stuff. You went against them with conditions preceding to stop the foreclosure, and that case has not been adjudicated on conditions preceding, but yet they were allowed to move forward and take the house and do whatever.
Yeah, but right. You know something, Dave? He probably didn't ask. He probably didn't try to seek an injunction, and that's probably the killer.
Yeah.
Right, because they didn't know about that before this.
You know what I mean, Dave? If you don't ask for it,
yeah, they didn't automatically hold
it
because of the lawsuit.
No.
They would have had to apply for a TRO stop the activity until the resolution of the conditions preceding suit. But now, Jesse, where would you see them being as far as pushing the conditions preceding suit forward?
How are you holding them accountable to it? Under what statutes? What are you doing? You see? It's a breach of contract, breach of agreement.
Right.
So what did you sue them under? FDCPA is what you said. So they get the FDCPA dismissed. What happens to the other count?
Well, the count one is breach of contract and conditions preceding not met.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that's great. Okay, you're good. You're golden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're good, man.
So, yeah, so they've got to push that forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're good.
And then as a result of that, be able to see about getting the judgment of foreclosure vacated if they win on that basis. And then go after him for damages, all the damages that he's incurred as a result of them taking the property. You know, didn't you say it was a rental property? Or am I confused with something else?
It was.
So he lost rental income and everything else. That's all actual damages that he would have sustained as a result of their actions.
Plus loss of use of the property and all that. I mean,
right. But, I mean, that's documentable.
Yeah. But now that the bank has it purchased back and technically owns it, does that add any extra layer of complexity to the situation?
No, not really. It's still within their possession. It's actually easier that way than if they sold it to somebody like a third party.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because then you'd have another party to have to drag into it and everything else.
I think you're in good shape. I really do.
Yeah. So just push forward on what you got there on the breach of contract
now,
on the conditions preceding.
I've heard Jesse talk about if the bank sends you a letter and it states at the bottom, this is from a debt collector, any information collected will be used for that purpose. Does that still not put them under the FDCPA?
Not necessarily.
If their name shows up on the note?
Are they the original creditor?
Okay.
Simple as that.
And just because they have a blank note that's not endorsed to them, but it has their name on it as the original creditor, that still disqualifies them from underneath.
Yeah, you still have to understand. And what you just said might confuse every other listener that's not sure. Why would something be endorsed to them if it's made out to them?
Well,
why do you keep thinking this in your head?
Well,
it doesn't have to be
like,
endorsed by anybody. You made a note to Jesse, end of story. Here it is. There's no endorsement. You already endorsed it to me. There'd only be an endorsement if I was endorsing it to Dave. But if I'm the original guy, there's nothing there. There's no need for anything there.
Okay, so in other words, just because, I write you a check, you have to endorse the back of it before it gets deposited.
No,
right.
You don't have to do that.
Well,
no, it's not a check.
Yeah, but
it's a note.
It's not a check. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, you don't cash it.
A negotiable instrument, though, right?
Yeah, they can negotiate it away, but they're not cashing it.
Okay.
Yeah, you're trying to mix apples and oranges here.
No, I don't think he's trying. I just think he doesn't understand the difference. That's all.
Yeah, well.
Right, right. Well, I know I wrote, reading in the NCLC books, it talks about notes, unless they have paid to the order of on them, then they're really not
yeah.
a note.
No, not necessarily. That's only if it's getting transferred. If I send it over to Dave and it says pay the order of with no recourse and I sign it and leave it blank,
oh.
it's no longer a note. It's a bearer instrument. Now it becomes basically a check. So whoever bears it can settle the payment. But if it
so
stays
then,
within my possession, who am I endorsing it to? There's nobody. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that was just misunderstandings on my part as well as my dad's.
Yeah, see, all you're doing when you endorse the back of a check is what are you endorsing it? What are you doing? Most people don't even know what they're doing when they do that.
Your
what are you endorsing?
Finance.
Exactly. What are you doing when you do that? What are you actually doing? What's the function of, and the purpose of you signing the back of the check?
So the bank can put it into your account.
No. You've endorsed it over to the bank. You see? No different than I would endorse the note over to Dave.
Oh, okay. That makes it pretty clear and simple.
Yeah, so they can then at that point they can deposit it and collect the money on your behalf from somebody else. Because what 99.9% of Americans don't understand is when you make a bank deposit, you no longer own the money. You've given the bank a loan. That's why when they default, you're screwed.
You become a creditor of the bank every time you
yeah.
make a deposit.
Exactly. Every time that
okay,
you drop
well,
a nickel. You lend them the money.
That means that I have to tell my dad then his federal lawsuit against the Associated Bank in Wisconsin as well as the law firm that went through with that foreclosure up there in his personal home because that's Associated Bank and their name is on all the documents. He's got only an FDCPA suit against them, which that doesn't make any sense unless he modifies that one to include their lack of default notice of default, but then he can't really do that because he's got that in as an affirmative defense in the state court. So,
well, I'm confused now.
Well,
yeah,
I'm
not.
Switched,
yeah,
over,
he's
got switched over to my dad's
yeah.
home in based on what you guys are saying tonight, my dad's federal lawsuit against the bank in Wisconsin on his personal home, as well as the law firm, is a moot point then for FDCPA.
No,
yes.
Well, not necessarily. No,
well,
no.
Against the lender.
Against the lender, yes. The law firm
yes.
still could be possibly open.
Exactly.
If they're doing
right.
something they're not supposed to do, slap a knot in their head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, okay, that makes me feel a little better. But then with my understanding, my dad talking, because we've taken the conditions precedent issue to task in the state court one, and we've actually have it in the appeals, we're appealing that because, you know, he gave him summary judgment on it, but he didn't really address the conditions proceeding at all. It would not be appropriate to put that then in the federal case because it's being adjudicated.
Not a federal issue. Yeah, it's not a federal issue to begin with, so you couldn't do it.
Okay.
The breach of agreement.
Breach of agreement, okay.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with federal issues.
All right, well, I think that clarifies
I hope that clears
a whole
it
lot
up.
More.
Yeah, you sound like you're
gets you some clarity on things there.
I hope that did. Man.
Yeah, I'm just kind of disappointed that we didn't catch on to this earlier because I know we kind of latched on to the whole, well, if they put on there that, you know, this is from a debt collector, we're like, oh, okay, they're admitting to it. So we just kind of went
yeah.
wild with that.
And you
yeah.
know what? You could
yeah.
argue that. I mean, you could argue that and, you know, let them rebut it and say, well, wait a minute, you wrote it. Here it is. And just
right.
just as one last-ditch effort to a motion in opposition to their dismissal, or response to their motion to dismiss, saying, hey, wait a minute, they admitted they were debt collectors. Here's the proof.
Okay.
And, you know,
right.
You never know, man. I mean, hell,
yeah.
if you don't
yeah. don't expect
there,
to
don't
get
know.
A, yeah, don't expect to get a positive result, but you can make that argument and see.
Yeah.
Is what
well,
I
heard. What do you got to lose, you know?
argue it with all teeth bearing on it and see where it gets
you.
But don't get too excited if it doesn't go your way.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Sounds
yep.
fair enough. I appreciate all you guys do,
yep.
and have a great night.
Thank you.
All right,
all
thanks,
Dave.
You
how
too.
How long are we going to take this call, pal?
I was just
already.
Getting ready to ask you that question here, and the gentleman we were just talking to, if you could hit one on your keypad, that would drop you out of the queue there. How far do you want to go, Jesse? We've got more people in the queue. We're 2 hours and 10 minutes into the call.
Yeah, we could be here another hour and a half, easy.
Yeah, yeah.
no,
well, no, it'll get cut off at a three-hour call.
yeah.
So how long do you want to go?
I think we need to call it a night. It's after 10, and we have to start limiting these to 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, with that said, then we'll go ahead and wrap things up for tonight.
Well, I'll tell you what,
Dave.
Let's do. Hold on. Let's do 20 more minutes to 10:30 because we had a half an hour of news and good news and intro. So let's go knock out another 20 minutes. You can give us about 15 minutes of questions and 5 minutes to wrap up.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, so given that. We are going to ask that you be very short, sweet, and to the point on what your questions are. Minimize any chit-chat so that we can try and get as many people in as possible here. So let's go to 360. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
We can.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is really great. So I'm new. My name is Jan.
Well, welcome, Jan.
Hi.
Good evening.
So I have some good news, but I'll tell you that at the end. So I do have some couple questions. The first one is, the first one is, if I had a soft pull on my credit report, do I have to send them a dispute notice? I mean, to the credit company.
Why are you disputing?
No, I mean, if it's a soft pull on my credit report, right? So do
yeah,
I have to send a dispute letter to the credit reporting company?
What again, I asked you the simple question of what are you disputing?
What I'm disputing is that they I guess it's a little harder when you get on the phone here.
Don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. But this is a learning process.
They got onto my credit report without my permission.
No, who's they? Who said you're going to send to the credit reporting company, which would be the agency?
Previously, before
they just sent it out to whoever requested it. So, what are you disputing with them?
I'm disputing with them that they're not supposed to be on my credit or doing soft pulls on my credit report or getting on my credit report.
They didn't do a soft pull.
They didn't?
No. Somebody else did a soft pull. The credit reporting agency only furnished the information.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The other person that did the soft pull, I can just they told me that I had to send a dispute notice to the credit agency first before I can, you know, send them a dispute letter. I have to do
who
it to
told
the
you
credit.
That?
Yeah, so now you're taking directions from the person who did you wrong. I like that.
Yes, I know, but I just wanted to confirm because you guys said two things. You guys said two things. Those people who do soft pulls, you don't have to dispute it with
anything when it comes to credit pulls. So you're not a member. I know you're not. Because you would know
that.
No,
I am a member. Yes, I am. But it's only
been
3 or 4 days.
Pulls. We just
okay.
You.
Okay.
We just
need you need to do some studying.
Yeah, if you dispute it and it comes off your credit, now it makes it harder for you to sue. Even though that's an admission of guilt as far as we're concerned, because you wouldn't take it off if you weren't guilty. But why not leave it on there and just sue you?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wanted to leave it on there and I wanted to
don't dispute it. Then you can't dispute it. It's the opposite of what you're saying.
Oh, it
if
is.
If you dispute it, it's coming off. If it comes off, now you follow where I'm going?
Right. But if someone does a hard pull on your credit report.
The SCRA doesn't distinguish soft or hard.
Oh, okay. I guess I didn't know
there's
that.
There's no distinguish. Yeah, there's nothing there to distinguish it.
Okay, and
but with you being a new member for 4 days, you have a bunch of studying to do, and you'll understand more of this when you spend more time in there.
Right.
Yeah,
I just don't,
I
I've actually been doing this a long time by myself, but not with the credit report, but definitely with the other stuff. So that's why I'm asking the credit report questions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, no, that's good. You need to learn it, and that's good. So absolutely.
So anyway, so I got another place from National Loan Recoveries, LLC, from Stamford, Connecticut, and they didn't even put their phone number on there, and they said they're recovering the loan, but I
don't
have
call.
Anything with them.
Isn't that wonderful, Dave, how they're getting? Just send me the check. Don't even bother calling me.
I know. So anyway, okay, so I guess my basic thing is I had a foreclosure, but questions I have about that is it transferred to a new servicer, and they did not do an attorney, in fact, at the county office, and so their attorney can't file foreclosure documents or anything like that because they aren't in the record. Is that correct?
Okay, repeat the question. Because there's a lot of confusion.
I'm in a non-judicial state. So
right.
I know everything that's down at the courthouse.
Okay.
So in our non-judicial state, when it passes this to a servicer, they have their attorneys, when they go to do a foreclosure, they have to have an attorney, in fact, I believe, at the courthouse. Saying
you
that
believe or you know factually?
Well,
yeah,
no,
I
this
know
is weird.
Silly because it's happened yeah. two times that, and they did
okay,
that.
Okay, so if I transfer to a servicer, why would I have to have anybody involved at the courthouse? It's not a legal function.
Because, I don't know. I live in the state of Washington, and I know that it's a chain of title in the state. For some reason.
I understand it. It's called an assignment. All I'm saying is, why would it go through the court? It would be public record.
That's what I meant, public record.
Okay, it's not the courthouse.
The courthouse. At public records
it's
at
the
courthouse.
Not even the courthouse. That's not the courthouse. That's the comptroller's office. That's who files all the stuff and keeps it, the county recorder's office.
Right.
Okay. I just remember, there's other people listening.
Right.
So that's why I'm always being very detail-oriented on what we say and how we say it.
Okay.
That's a county recorder's office. It's not the courthouse.
Right.
It might
county
be.
Recorder's
it
office.
Might be. Yeah, yeah. That's got to be very clear because when you look for assignments, that's where you go look.
Right. So that's where I know everything is.
Okay. There should be. Yeah.
Should be
there. Right.
So anyway, so they did a notice of default, and I sent them a letter saying that the attorney, you know, there was no attorney in fact or anything down there, and then I requested that they remove the attorney and stop the foreclosure, and they actually did it.
Yeah, because if you do that, if there's no attorney in fact, then how did they get there to begin with? So you just stopped it. An old trick. Yeah, in Washington. Yes.
Yeah, well, okay, I probably am one of an old-timer that you just don't know about, but I have been doing this since 2006.
Good.
I haven't paid a payment on my house since 2006.
What's your statute of limitations down there?
6 years, but...
So you're there.
No, I filed a bankruptcy case, so I had to have an extension. You know what I mean? So it extended the 6 years. Okay, so if you guys don't understand this, I'll tell you. Okay.
Yeah, no, I understand that. In
the state of Washington, the statute of limitations is 6 years for them to collect on a deed of trust or a note.
Correct.
So if you don't make any type of payment, not even $1 to them in that amount of time, then you can file quiet title.
Correct.
But if you file bankruptcy, that extends the six-year period by ever how many days that bankruptcy is. And how you can find that information is by pulling your credit report, and it gives you the dates that the time that you were in bankruptcy, the time you filed, and the time it was discharged. And then you add that to the six-year period or whatever your state statute of limitations is.
Okay.
And then at the end of that date, then you can file quiet title.
So it's already
so my
8 years.
Is, my
How long are you in this bankruptcy, for Christ's sake?
The end of my day is January 22nd, 2014, to file quiet title. So that's my good news.
That's awesome.
They keep, so with this new servicer that started in February of 2013, so I just kept writing to them. So does that mean that they, since they're just a collection agency, which I do know, so I just keep writing to them so and getting information out of them. So does that mean that I'm acknowledging something or?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Not if you're asking.
Corresponding.
You
know. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, but I've also sent the FDCPA. This is before I knew you guys. But I sent the FDCPA notification to them that they could not contact with me. You know, there's the three things that they say in the law that you can't, unless this, this, or this. And, but they kept contacting me, so.
And
so my
you
question
sent that
is,
to who? You sent it to the original letter, lender or the servicer?
To the servicer.
The new servicer.
Yeah. So every time they call me or whatever after that, then they're in violation?
Yeah, if you told them do not call you, every one of those would be a actual violation. Yeah.
Yeah, because they are a debt collector because they acquired it when it was in default.
That's right.
Right. Right. I said do not contact me, but then they did contact me.
Yep.
And he goes, and I.
You can hammer them, absolutely.
Okay,
right.
but it's for each time?
It
or
depends
for,
on
like,
your state law. Under the FDCPA.
FDCPA.
You can't. You'd have to hit them, you know, within a year's time more than once, and that ain't going to happen. So you got to look
that.
At your Washington
I mean,
law.
But what I'm talking about is, they, like, let's say on February 1st, they violated. And then on
it
February
6th,
I know what
times
you're talking about.
Violate. Yeah. They, you could
exactly
only collect $1,000
yeah.
per action, no matter how many violations
yeah.
there are.
$1,000 per action per year?
No,
yeah.
I didn't say per year. $1,000
yeah.
per
no, within
loss
a year, statute of limitations. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So there's an action on February 1st, and then I can collect $1,000. So they do it again on March 1st, and I can collect
nope.
another $1,000.
No. Because if you try and file another lawsuit, they're going to combine them into one.
Or they're going to say, listen, we've already paid the same debt we're trying to collect.
So basically what we're telling you is there's $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter whether they violate eight times.
Yeah. But don't forget, Washington has great, great consumer laws.
Yeah, right.
I have a lot of good
Check
friends
your state
that
law.
There. Yeah, and up to $5,000.
I've read it a lot.
Yeah, and Florida or Washington might be different. You might be able, you know, like Florida, under the Beter case, we can file for every violation.
Mm.
In Washington, and ours only 1,000 anyway, we're up to 1,000. Washington's up to 5,000. So forget the FDCPA. I wouldn't even pay no mind to that. It's chump change.
5,000 for what?
Law. For the consumer
per violation.
State of Washington. Per violation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
check
didn't
your
know.
Laws out carefully.
Yeah, I didn't see where they had the amount. That's why I didn't. No, I was reading it,
yeah.
but I didn't find the remedy.
Well, you look for the private right of action that's allowed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave, we got to keep moving. We got
right.
3 minutes left.
I was just
going
to say we need to
left.
Keep moving here.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get another caller in.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Okay. Let's go to 708. This will probably be our last one for tonight.
What the heck is that?
Hello, you there?
We're here. That sounds like a Rodney.
We lost him.
Well, hang on a second here. I keep trying to unmute him, and there we go.
All right.
All right.
Hello, guys. How
Rodney?
Yes.
There
Good
you
evening,
go.
Rodney.
Happy New Year to all of you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Same to you. Thank you.
Since I'm the last call, I'm going to make it brief because I'm tired anyway. I've been on.
Yeah, man.
I'm tired. Anyway, real short and sweet. With the insurance things, I've survived now my sixth motion to dismiss. So that's
very good.
We've got a status call in March, which my questions were going to be about the 26F, but listening to some previous callers, I've taken some notes. I'm pretty well set with that, and I will review the webinar and post questions in a forum if I have anything there. But now, I'm getting started on something for my daughter. Debt collectors have been calling her and have sold off of each debt dispute letter that I've asked her to prepare and she mailed in. It started off with a company called Enhanced Recovery. They stopped after the dispute letter. Then J.C. Christensen and Associates out of Sauk Rapids, Minnesota. And most recently, a new one, where are they? They are called Accounts Receivable Management, which leads me to my questions here. They've called my house already 14 times. And
nice.
What I was not doing that you mentioned was actually saying, do not call this phone number. Take it
back. You don't need to do that.
Oh,
you
okay.
don't need to do that unless you've given them that number.
No. I asked them, how did they get it? They said, my daughter gave them my home number. I says, okay, I doubt that's true, but I'll confer with her. They asked me, does she live there? And I said, well, I'm her father, so my home is her home, period. That's how I answered it. And then
right,
I,
but it's still a home number, correct?
Right. And
okay,
I
so
asked,
now the only way you violate, well, listen, the 14 times doesn't matter at this point.
Ah.
It's only one violation under the FDCPA. You've told them not to call you. They continue to call you, then you sue them.
Ah.
TCPA is still not going to apply. It's a landline.
Oh.
And it's definitely a debt collection activity.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And they've not given a memoranda or anything like that. They just said it's an important business matter relating to Mia. But
yeah, so that's $1,000.
Here's the beautiful thing. While I'm listening to the show tonight, they called my cell phone. First call.
That's
don't
that's
you love
the bonus.
It.
And you don't say, don't call this number. You just let them keep ringing, document it all.
Well,
you know.
Get this. I did ask. I said, you know, you're calling now my cell phone as well as my home phone. How did you get this number? They said, same thing. Your daughter must have put it down as a reference.
Oh, my
God. And get this.
Merry Christmas again.
Hey, before I could say another word, the woman got smart with me and said, as long as you answer, we're going to keep calling you because we're after Mia.
Oh, keep
with that, having
oh.
tonight, and I just hung up on him. She got real pissy. Said, we're going to keep calling you until she calls us back.
Well, that's good. I like that.
So I
no
said,
worries.
Okay, feel free.
Then, you know, translated, she just said, we want to pay you a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
So now here's
yeah.
my question, because this is what I was just about to do. I wanted to change my outgoing voice message on my home machine that basically states in case of emergency, you can reach me, give them my cell phone number, as well as my daughter's.
Right.
To set them up. But stress, in case of emergencies only.
Yes. If this is a dire emergency or an emergency, you may reach me at my cell phone at and say it's a cell phone so that they can't argue, well, we didn't know it was a cell phone.
Okay. Good point. Now, they called me originally on, I think, the 19th, my birthday, as a matter of fact, and then she received her Dunning letter in California on the 24th, Christmas Eve. So I said, okay. So I wanted to prepare a lawsuit for her out in California and tie all three parties because obviously they're selling it off to another debt collector.
Well, selling it off to another debt collector in itself is another attempt to collect the debt.
Yeah.
So.
And they called her cell phone. Each individual debt collector has called her cell phone several times. This is the first debt collector that started calling my home and now my cell phone number. And I've got a call off.
You're
going to
have a wonderful new year, aren't you?
Okay. All right. Just that was it, guys. I know it's late. I'll try and catch up with everyone on Wednesday evening, if not Wednesday, 2 o'clock Central Time.
3 o'clock.
2 o'clock Central Time for me.
Yep.
Yep. So with that said, Jesse, I do want to ask you later about my Bank of America suit that I'm about to file based on conditions preceding, if you can take a look at it. But that's another matter right now. With that said, I'm going to wish everybody Happy New Year and a very good night.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank
All right,
you very much.
Go ahead and wrap her up, David. We're here. So let's get
Absolutely.
This time,
I have some ending good news.
Well, you got to make it quick. It's 10:29. Well, I still have to go through.
That was past the deadline, and they just buried themselves some more. Toast time.
Good. That's
good.
Awesome.
Good, 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 good. All right. To wrap up our very first blog talk call of 2014, we want to remind everybody what the schedule is going forward. I'll start with the beginning of the week. On Monday nights is Dallas Death Discussion. That is still on TalkShoe. The PIN number is 54318, and the time is 9 o'clock Eastern. And that's a support call for what we're doing here. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you know about Blog Talk Radio. It's 8 o'clock on Tuesday nights Eastern, and we are using a little different format. We hopefully will get a couple of the little wrinkles moved out of it by next time. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern, John is doing a webinar on resources. Don't miss that. If you are a member, and if you're not a member, get signed up so you can get in and catch that with John tomorrow and be able to ask him questions. And then tomorrow night is Terry's call, which is a support call. It's done every week. If you are not on her email list to get the reminders and the other documents that she sends out weekly, send an email to queensongbird@gmail.com. And she will then get you on the list, send you the reminders. That call starts at 8 o'clock Eastern, again, every Wednesday night. So we are no longer doing the Monday What Lies in Your Debt calls, so don't expect to find us there on the Mondays anymore. That's been changed. We're going to try and time into this. So everybody, I hope you have a great week, and thanks for joining us for the first blog talk. Program this week and this year, I should say. And Jesse, you got any final parting words?
No, I'm just happy that we had no glitches. We really haven't, Dave. Zero. So this is good. No more TalkShoe problems, and that's the reason we went over here. So again, everybody have a great week. God bless everybody. Enjoy your week. Stay warm. I know it's cold all over, even in Florida. 30 degrees, flipping cold. So. Enjoy the week. Stay warm, and we will see you, most of you, tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Have a great, great night.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.